Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Part-Time at Lambda School. I am your host, Ira Sanchez. And who am I? I am a student. Oh, wait. Now I am a TL at Lambda School. Yes. Yes, that's right. I recently became a team lead for the Web Part-Time 11 cohort that started a couple weeks ago, and there are a few reasons that I decided to apply for the position. The first is that I felt a really strong desire to review the fundamentals after learning a lot through my labs experience. The learning curve that I went through just skyrocketed for me during that experience, and I felt like I really could have and should have done so much more prior to that point. And so I wanted to use this opportunity to get more reps in and really solidify my learning prior to diving into some of the deeper stuff in computer science. Secondly, is that it's better for my students at my day job. So during the day, I teach as an assistant teacher at a Montessori school for 3 to 6 year olds, and this allows me to better align my graduation date with the end of their school year so I can smoothly transition out of their lives and not just suddenly disappear from their point of view. Second to last is that the additional income is nice. It's nice to get some extra money. The one downside is that I'm technically a contractor, so I do have to keep track of my own taxes, but that's fine because I was doing that for quite some time before working as an assistant teacher, so I'm a bit comfortable with the bureaucratic part of that lifestyle, so I don't find it too intimidating. It's nice to get some income while learning. I'm basically getting paid to learn and to be nice to new students and make them feel welcome. It's really nice. And then the last reason is that I wanted to have a little bit more experience under my belt on my resume that says that I've worked at a place that is techie and not really like stuff from my previous lifestyle, which was almost exclusively campaigns and political work and frankly things that are not even allowed to be discussed in a lot of people's workplaces. So I really need something to put on my resume that doesn't make people cringe right off the bat. So I decided that this would help me feel a little bit more comfortable and a little bit more prepared for the job hunting process in the future. Right now, like I said before, I'm a TL for WebPT 11. They just started their journeys. We just had our first sprint, and I just finished grading them. So we're 2 weeks into the curriculum is what that essentially means. And I get to see some of the changes that have been made since I first did my first sprint. And it's a lot. I mean, keep in mind when I began in Lambda and I had my first sprint, I was technically in CS6. So that was quite some time ago. Because, I mean, they don't even call it CS anymore now. Now the cohorts are called Web. So because, they didn't have several other tracks at the time. There was nothing else. It was just web development when I began. Now there's data sciences and Android and iOS and UX and web. So it's really awesome just what's going on here. Anyway, small tangent, right back in. The training kit's been essentially entirely reorganized. Much of the content's the same, but they're constantly improving it, especially because we have a Slack channel dedicated to just giving feedback about how the training kit can be fixed. But a lot of the content's the same. The projects I've noticed have gotten a little bit upgraded, so it's not working on the same Smurf list over and over and over again. Like, for example, there are Rick and Morty projects now, which I'm really excited for because I love Rick and Morty, so I'm super stoked for that. As a result of being a TL, I get to see things from a slightly different perspective. I get to see someone struggling with something that I used to struggle with. And in a way, it's very empowering for me to recognize and realize just how far I've come. It's also a little difficult because to an extent, you forget why you were confused after a while, if it's been too far away. So in some ways, I just try to make sure that I remember what I got stuck on that that I remember what really blocked me, and reflecting on that so that I can help students. At first, I wasn't really able to recall it immediately. I have to sort of intentionally bring those thoughts up to mind so that I can hone the experience in a way that it's actually useful, right? Because the feedback that an expert can give you is not going to be the same feedback as a peer can give you, and they're both useful for different reasons. One, in my experience, is usually more applicable to the other as an individual, unless you're also an expert. I get to see the students shine. I get to cheer them on. One of the things that I really like about being a TL is I literally tell my students I love them, that they're loved and supported, and that they're going to make it through this. But I also am very stern with them, and I let them know that I hi have high expectations, and I'm not going to let anyone sort of fall under the radar like I did, where I wasn't really understanding it, and I could have been working harder and doing less copying and pasting, for example, but no one seemed to notice that I just wasn't really actually learning. I was, again, pretty early on in the program, and a good TL makes a very big difference. Everyone's a little bit different, and the TL training has changed a lot. So I just try to be the TL that I wish I had. So one of the things is that it's tough because some of the students, when they struggle, they're not necessarily struggling because they don't understand the content per se. It's that they're struggling because they don't want to do what it takes to understand the content, because they have an idea that they have to intellectually understand what is taking place in order to do what is being described. So, for example, of an instance where other people don't really feel this way is whenever sorting anything. So in a Montessori classroom, for example, you see a lot of sorting items, because practicing differentiation is a skill that you have to learn, and learning how to differentiate almost literally everything that you can touch is what a lot of 3 to 6 year olds do. And so sorting is actually an algorithm. There are a variety of algorithms for sorting, and that's what computer science, the curriculum, is essentially about, and that's why we learn Python. So the act of sorting is a very heady experience if you want to discuss it prior to doing it. But if you do it, you don't have to actually know what any of the words are in order to do it. You don't really need to understand that. What you need to understand is the movement, the feel of it, and see the process and understand when to do what according to its own timing. In the same way that if, like, say, for example, you're singing a song, you don't necessarily have to know music theory to know when it's time to start singing. You literally feel it as a tactile experience. And so coding is also a tactile experience. It's mostly centered in the hands, right? So you get to the point where, by virtue of doing the physical reps, you don't have to think about it so much. You might get better at being able to explain why something happens the more you understand, how you broke it, when and where. But I don't necessarily perceive it to be a requirement. It's a requirement to be able to intellectualize and communicate about your code. If you're working with other people, certainly, because you have to be able to read their notes and share your thoughts with them and whatnot. But if you just want to learn how to code in and of itself, no, you don't really need to intellectually understand the conceptual framework behind a language in order to do it. You just have to do it over and over and over again until you get better. But for a job in a profession, yeah, we need to understand sort of the theoretical understanding behind those movements, behind those actions, so that we can explain ourselves and the decisions that we've made. Because we are going to have to take ownership of our choices and the consequences of our choices in the work environment, especially if we're working, say, for example, for like a government agency or something like that. But so, it's tough because on the one hand, there, as a student, you feel like you're drowning, you know, and you feel like there you're doing everything you can because you're watching all of these videos and you're reading all of these articles, and it feels like because it's taking so much time and because it's so difficult and because your head hurts so much, you know, trying to comprehend it all, that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. But I would venture to say that you're not. I would venture to say that you need to stop watching videos. You need to stop reading articles after a certain point, right? Like, I'm not saying never watch a video or never read an article. Not what I'm saying. After a certain point, you need to stop and you need to do it. I know that it's hard to say to yourself, well, how am I supposed to do something that I don't comprehend? And I'm going to get into that in just a moment because I've learned a lot from my students in just watching the state of confusion. It's one thing to be in the state of confusion and not know your way out. It's another thing to somehow have found your way out of the state of confusion, not realize that you have found your way out of the state of confusion, and then meet someone else who's more confused than you, and then you have to help them find their way to where you are. So as a result, I've learned a lot, and I'd like to share some of those things that I've learned. So the first thing I've learned is that when we get into HTML and CSS and we're learning for the first time about the document object model, aka the DOM, and we are learning about how the DOM is essentially an outline, and we're learning about the box model at the very beginning of the curriculum, the first thing I notice is that when you describe the box model to a student, they often perceive it as putting the HTML element into the box, as opposed to, because they perceive the almost like the HTML element to be the content, as opposed to every HTML element being a box. So that's the first thing I learned. Every HTML element is a box, so you don't need to add a box to everything. You just need to manipulate the box that it already has. Some boxes have content, like text inside of them. But whether or not it has content, it will still have the same four walls of a box, empty or full. So, for example, when working on taking a design document and turning it into semantic HTML, that's one of the very first assignments. When we do that, I notice that a lot of my students put so many HTML tags. It's not that it's wrong, it's just that every single thing you create, you're going to have to take care of and maintain. So, for the sake of keeping your life easier, it would just behoove you to have less. Really, less is more when it comes to, I mean, personally, from my point of view, stuff in general, but also HTML tags. If you don't need an extra container, then why make it? Because it just means that you're going to be responsible for styling it, figuring out its purpose, figuring out whether or not it's useful. I don't know. I just don't see the point. So, the biggest example I saw is putting an image tag inside of a div so that you can align it. Using in either inline block or using flexbox, you don't need to put an image tag inside of a div. An image tag is a box, just like a div is a box, just like a section is a box, just like an anchor tag is a box. They are all boxes. Again, some of them have content, certain types of content, like the image has source, for example. And A tags usually are wrapped around text. So they have content or not, but they're all boxes. The second thing I learned is that a lot of students really struggle with the implementation process of some of the early assignments where we take a design document, convert it to HTML, and style it in using some sort of specific approach, whether it's using only the box model, whether it's using Flexbox, whether it's using less, et cetera, et cetera. So, in the process of trying to help a student remember the process of what steps one might want to take
when doing these assignments, I came up with an acronym. It is SOAP, S-O-A-P, SOAP. So the first thing in SOAP is you sketch it out. You take your design document and you can use your paint tool in your computer, or you can print it out and use a pencil, whatever you want. But you take, you take the time to sketch out your HTML elements. You find them in the image. They are there and they're up to you to be defined. And so you draw them right then and there. And how about you maybe make a note here and there and give them names, whether it's their actual HTML tag name, like A or section or div, or whether it's the class names you want to give them. If you plan on giving them class names, I would maybe do both so that way you know what HTML tag you want to attach that class to. SOAP. So that's the S, sketch it out. O, we are going to outline that sketch. Again, remember, the internet is an outline. It goes from top to bottom, essentially, and unless you say otherwise, things will just sort of stack on top of each other or side by side, right? So it's not like a sphere or a circle or anything like that. It has essentially the same pattern as Tetris, right? Things just line up. And so you want to turn your sketch into an outline format so that it fits on the internet, so that it takes on the rules of the internet, if you will. After you turn it into a vague outline, you're going to add some annotations to that outline. That's the A in SOAP. So we sketch it, then we outline it, then we annotate it. Annotating it here is essentially what we call pseudocode. If you've never heard the word pseudocode before, it essentially is like the Spanglish of coding. It's half code, half English, or half whatever language you speak. You put your thoughts of what you want to do in code down line by line. So if you need to put some HTML elements down, I would say I need a section tag here to hold this, right? And so then underneath that line, you might say, I need a div inside of this section tag, or I might need a paragraph tag inside of this section tag, or something like that, right? So you're taking the time to turn that outline into something a little bit more fleshed out. Once you have your annotations, your SOA, then we can complete the SOAP. We will have the SOAP because it's time to program, P-program those annotations. So once we have those annotations, we can translate those annotations into code. So whenever you have a problem, when you need to work on your assignment, the first thing you need to do, at least for the beginning of the curriculum, I haven't quite tested this out on every single homework assignment in Lambda, but or in every single project in Lambda, but for now, whenever you get an assignment, you can take out your SOAP. You sketch it out, you outline it, you annotate it, then you program it. The last thing you should be doing is writing HTML, CSS, or JavaScript. The first thing you should be doing is taking a nebulous, vague idea and bringing it into the physical world by creating a visual, tactile experience, like outlining it and annotating it, so that you can turn it into something concrete and less dreamy. And then that way you can turn it into a very literal line-by-line thing like programming requires. All right, so SOAP, sketch it out, outline it, annotate it, program it. All right, so the third thing I learned, that was a bit, but anyway, so the third thing I learned is that when using Flexbox, you rely on your box model editing tools last. Flexbox is the big picture. You want to do your fine-tune editing using the box model. So big things tend to come first, and then we put the tiny details on them later. Because otherwise, we might mess up the process of the larger edits. So it can really throw things off and make it more confusing to figure out where something is not working if you have a kajillion tiny edits as opposed to just a couple large ones to make. So yes, when using Flexbox, rely on your box model editing tools last. What do I mean by box model editing tools? So making adjustments to the margin or to the padding. For example. So focus on using Flexbox first. I'm not including things like height and width, because sometimes you need to have height and width in order for Flexbox edits to even apply. And then lastly is if you do not give an HTML element boundaries, you will get messy children inside of that HTML element. That was not, that was, oh man, let me try that again. If you do not give an HTML element boundaries, you will get a mess. That's what I meant to say. The children inside of that HTML element, depending on what kind of screen you have, will span the width of infinity. Someone has a large enough screen for that at that point. At this point, I feel like it's 2019. If somebody does not have an infinity width in this screen, I will be shocked. No, but for real, if you don't have a set width on the container for your whole website, because you assume that the screen is a concrete width, then what will happen is someone else with a larger or smaller screen will open up your website and destroy it. So a couple of my students, for example, were sort of surprised by, oh my goodness, excuse me. Some of my students were surprised by their sprint challenges and the visual when I pulled it up on my computer, and it did not match what it looked like on their computer. And these projects are simple enough that I know it's not for a huge variety of other potential reasons for that. It was purely in this case due to the container of the entire page lacking a width. And so as a result of that, some of the things just moved very far to the right or very far to the left, or images were not the sizing that they were anticipated to be because of that. So yeah, like I said, I'm learning a lot through the mistakes of others, because now it's almost exponential. When I make mistakes, I only learn from my mistakes. But when I have a team of people who make mistakes, I get to learn from all kinds of mistakes. So I'm really enjoying myself, and hopefully the things I'm learning get to help you learn better, faster, stronger, get to help you learn too. Thanks for listening. And I have no set schedule for these. I just sort of do them randomly. If I decide to be reliable all with regard to this podcast, I'll make an update and I'll let you know. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.